Hello, everybody. This is Jacqueline Armendariz Unzueta, aka Jax, and I am so pleased to welcome you to the very first episode of Justice with Jax. And I'm so pleased to introduce as well my esteemed colleague, Sean Walls. Let the people know who you are, Sean.
Hello, my name is Sean Walls. I'm the vice president of the Chinook Center and a founding member of the Men of Influence here in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Excellent. And there's a lot more to what you do in the community, but we'll get into that.
All right.
And so want to start off for episode one, just giving folks an idea of what Justice with Jax is about. As you know, I am the lead plaintiff in the U.S. civil rights case, Armendariz versus City of Colorado Springs. And that is an incredible, a challenging personal journey. And so to me, this podcast is an important record of the experience that we will have as a community, because, you know, sure, my name is on this case, but this is so much bigger than me. Yeah. And I do have to say, for example, you heard Sean mention Chinook Center. So the Chinook Center is a co-plaintiff and in this case. And so we are regularly meeting with the ACLU of Colorado, which are attorneys representing this case. And so to me, it's very, very important to have a record of what's really going on and who's going to tell the story better than the people living it, right? And so we're nearing 200 days since the case was filed this month, August 1, 2023. And today we're recording, we are February 9, 2024. And so, you know, I think another piece of what's important with this podcast is hoping to give people an idea of the actual legal system process. Like, what does that look like in U.S. District Court? And right, it's heavy, right? Like, what does that mean to have a case suing for your civil rights, especially in this community? And so that's why I'm really committed to doing this podcast. And I wanted to mention, share with folks that, you know, one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, there's an ongoing case. Aren't you worried that this is going to affect things? And we both know, and I'd love for you to jump in on this, Sean. Yeah. We both know that where our hearts are at is we strive to be a voice where others can't, because some of us have privilege in different ways. I know, Sean, you and I kind of peas in a pod in some ways that bring us to the forefront of issues like this. And for me, people's, you know, wondering whether I could jeopardize the case by doing this podcast, right? But here's my number one thing in answer to that FAQ is that if I don't do this podcast, isn't that the effect that they want? Don't they want us to be quiet? Don't they want us to be scared, right? And so I'd love to hear from you, Sean, a little bit about your thoughts on, there is ongoing litigation as a board member of Chinook Center, right? And how important, or what you think, how important it is to talk about the development of this case, because we are in for a journey.
Right. That's the thing. I think that, you know, one thing that I've learned is that when you're in a storm, it feels like that's the only thing going on, you know, and all of us are kind of in this thing, you know, that we're engulfed in. So, you know, yeah, I think, you know, of course, we definitely want to be careful on the things that you indulge or that we talk about, you know, because there are, I talked about this on my social media just yesterday. I think we have natural predators that are like watching everything and trying to cut us off before we get to even start the path to our destination, you know? So, yeah, you know, I think that anything, they'll try to do anything and use anything and come. But I feel like when they do that, it shows the reason why we're like, why
the power
exactly.
We have,
exactly.
Like, they're the ones who are actually
why
scared.
We need to do it. Yeah.
Why are they trying to silence
exactly,
us?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's something to it. There's definitely something to it, you know. So, as far as worrying about anything ancillary that's happening around, I don't ever do that.
I know, that's why we're peas in a pod.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I kind of like, we're doing this thing, and that's what it is,
and
we're just gonna go,
done.
Yeah, and that's it. And what happens, what comes from it, comes from it. You know, even the housing march itself, you know, they're inside the activist community, there was like, you know, we didn't know how to do it or if we should have done it or.
Let's take a beat on that, because some people listening to this might not immediately know what the housing march is. So like we were discussing just earlier that there is a moment in time that Admandares versus City of Colorado Springs is about technically, but it's about a much bigger story.
It's about a much bigger story
that goes all the way back to 2019 with the murder of Devon Bailey.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Without question, it does go all the way to that. And everything that's happened in this neighborhood or in this community as a whole, they can thank for what they did to him, you know, or what they did to our neighborhood following that and the abuse that followed. And, you know, really us realizing what had been happening for decades before, too. Mm-hmm. So whatever has occurred and came about from that, they owe to their own actions.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, and really.
Same for the case that's on
itself,
paper now.
Exactly. Like, yeah, this case came about because of what they did, not because of it wasn't you specifically or this person, anybody. It's because of what the pigs did to you. You know what I'm saying?
AKA Colorado Springs Police Department.
Yeah, the whole thing.
We keep saying they, so they are.
The pigs did that. And, you know, in conjunction with the city government, people in elected seats did that.
That's why this is a civil rights case, right? Because we can never forget that a police department is representing a government entity, right? They are an arm of the government.
Without question.
And that's why for people new to the knowledge of this case, I think one of the really important things there's a number of important things, but is knowing that it goes back farther than this housing rights march in 2021, which is how I became involved, and frankly in the sights of CSPD, and how flash forward we've gotten to this point where ACLU is suing the city on my behalf, on Chinook Center's behalf, because they violated some of our constitutional rights.
Yeah.
But so that's one piece of it. But another piece of it is that there was a growing movement over these years against the police brutality here in Colorado Springs. And it seems like in the eyes of the police and the government here that advocating for ourselves, demanding an end to the abuse, to the killing, was something that turned us into villains for these entities.
Yeah.
Now, why is that?
Right, exactly.
And so,
To this day,
to a large extent, like a part of that was really striking for me, and again, this lived a personal experience. You know, the police came to my house. It felt like an abduction, right? They confiscated all my electronic devices, left me in blackout mode, and Chinook Center and the people that make up Chinook Center were the ones there for me, right? Chinook Center paid my legal defense, and Chinook Center was who I turned to that day when I was released from county jail and needed somewhere safe and needed support. And so I think that, interestingly, you know, we can look back at history too, but there are moments when people start to build their own power. And why does that make our local government so nervous, or our government so nervous, right? I know you got plenty to say on that, Sean.
What it is because we're natural enemies to, or I don't know if it's enemies. I mean, I don't know what the word is, but it's like we naturally are going against each other. Our currents don't match, you know?
Call it like systems change? And it's like the pain of when you are trying to change how systems can be oppressive or hurt people. And one of the greatest ways you can do that is build people power.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would call it that. But what I'm saying is the reason why that people power has an ability to even become what it is because of what is being the environment that they're in and what's being done to them, you know? So what we got to realize is that usually what was good for the city government and for the police department, the sheriff's department, usually those things don't match up with what's good for the people.
The community wants, needs.
Right. So
the work, why does that make us criminals for pointing that out?
Well, it doesn't. But what it does make us is an enemy to their income.
To their agenda.
How they make money. No, not just like how they survive. Like how they feed their little piglets and raise them up. That's how that happens. They have to have this crime happening. They have to have this desolate condition happening. Yeah. They have to have this any equal education going on. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All of the chaos happening in the school districts. They need all of this stuff to happen for them to have a job, for them to be relevant and be able to suck up. What is it? At least right now, it's a third of the budget. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the payroll, it's almost a half of the city budget. Mm. So what good is it for them for this stuff to stop?
Fair enough.
That's period. Right? You know, like, so we can really make it ideological that, right? And like, all of this crazy shit. But stuff, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
All of this crazy stuff. But I mean, it really is just about their survival against our survival. Mm. You know what I mean? Yes. And that's what capitalism is. It needs to have this up and this down. Mm. And somebody has to be the down. So I feel like that's really the root of it all. So then it gets to all of this legalities and, oh, the she threw her bike at me. Yeah. You assault, that's a felony. You know, these things are absolutely absurd, but it's a real thing. And we're really still doing this 200 days later and before. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, it's going to be a while. Yeah. And to your point, like what you're mentioning is the allegation that CSPD used as a basis to violate my constitutional rights during that housing march where we had organized as a community wearing shirts that said, you know, housing is a human right. That's not radical. That's just real.
And that day, what was going on around that is what they really didn't want to have happening was the sesquicentennial of the city, the 150th.
Right. Any disruption of that is what they kind of used again as a basis of antagonizing us.
Basically put troops on the street about, like, they had helmets, they full SWAT billy clubs, elbow pads, the whole thing.
Can I ask you, I think that day was really hard. I remember being really sickened. I went home crying because I just couldn't believe what I had seen. And as we've gone through this case, there's so much documentation that we get to see, right? Yeah. On the other side, when you're accused or when you're in litigation, both sides are giving documentation up, right? And even now, that's happening with the civil rights case. But why it was important to me to bring you as a guest for the first episode was because I remember being just completely blindsided by how they had treated me, all based on the fact that they were antagonizing us, and one of them was charging the crowd. And as I saw them, I dropped my bike and was like, "You coming for me? Like, what the hell?"
Yeah.
And they used that as grounds to be petty, to retaliate against me, and accused me of a second degree felony.
Felony charge, which affected your entire life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why we have this podcast. We're gonna get into that, but a piece of that where you figured in, I remember trying to piece together, like, wait, how could this happen? And I remember reading one of the warrants, and it said something to the effect of, under the authority of the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then I started looking at more of the documentation for their warrants for my arrest and whatnot. And one of the most striking things to me was it really wasn't a lot of my stuff. It was mostly screenshots of your Facebook commentary and criticisms, right, of CSPD. So do you remember that time and kind of like what your thoughts were when we started discovering, frankly, that, Sean, you were more in their sights than anyone else was? Right. And ultimately, six of us were arrested with regard to that housing rights march. But we all had, you know, kind of different outcomes for different reasons. Yeah. And you were one of them. So at one time, you know, my co-defendant as well. Now we're co-plaintiffs, thankfully. So, tell me a little bit more about that very strange moment in time for us.
Yeah, for me, it was like, oh, this shit is working. Like, wow. You know what I'm saying? Like, you would see things and hear stuff and whatever, but it was like, oh, okay. we're really on to the right track right here because of the way that they're reacting. And then, you know, I mean, to be honest, all of those things happen to you. Around the neighborhood, there were people that had FBI agents come to their house, to their jobs.
That's another really important part of this case is that for my money, like, I think there's maybe just something about me that pissed them off a little bit more than usual. And, like, they picked the wrong one. They didn't know they were picking the wrong one.
Well, I think they knew which one they picked because of your job.
Yes, at the time, why they picked working for U.S. Senator Michael Bennett. That was a huge piece of it. And what I'm trying to say, what's interesting is that, no, that's okay. That's why this case is important, is because, sure, it has my name on it, but what it is also bringing to light is how others were affected and how there's been a pattern and practice from CSPD using people's political speech, which, again, that's the First Amendment there, against them, and somehow, like, criminalizing because of what political beliefs are.
Yeah, I mean, that's the American way, ain't it? Like, I mean, I tell people is, you know, because sometimes it feels like, you know, folks are maybe they place themselves on this higher level of impact than what it really kind of is, but, you know, which is totally fine sometimes because you got to dream and work your way to be what you want to be.
Believe in yourself.
Right. But, though, the truth is, you know, the things that we saw happening to the civil rights movement activists and people in the 60s and 70s right here in Boulder or in the Springs, that was, like, federal level. The FBI,
was literally
right there doing the work, right? And the city and state governments really didn't – they played a role. You know, they were doing whatever the dirty work was. But now, right here, every city police department has this stuff happening that was happening at the federal level in the 60s. So all of this subversive stuff that they try to do to the community to quell the work that is happening that's against, you know, their livelihood. Remember, it's not really about ideology. It's about money for them, you know. And they use all of these same tactics to stop it. And what I was getting at was that all, you know, the FBI agents, all of this stuff was going on. Not one time. No, not one person has came and questioned me. I've never been...
Even though you figure most prominently in a lot of the documentation.
Right. And my lawyer told me, he said, man, I got charged with...
In municipal court, it was some, like, obstruction or some...
And conspiracy.
And, I remember
and
that, yeah.
There was another charge, right? And I was like, man, obviously, we did what we did with those charges, right? Yeah. But when he was representing me, he said, man, when I saw your file, it was like I've had murder cases that were less lengthy than this than the surveillance and the things that they've done to you.
Let's talk about the surveillance.
Yeah.
No, and please continue with that.
So, you know, what happened is, you know, I just want to kind of back up to why this thing is happening, what I think is happening. I did 21 years in the United States Army, right? I did a lot of time. I got combat tours. I did all of this stuff that would have made me a perfect...
An American hero,
capitalist, you know, fascist pig, you know what I'm saying? And came and they would have just welcomed me right in. You know, I'm a black dude from the neighborhood. I did all the things...
Veterans are big in this town,
that they wanted me to do. But the fact that I'm doing this work instead, and they don't have anything on me, there's no, I'm not a criminal.
No matter how they've tried.
Yeah, they don't have nothing. So... The best thing to do is to isolate me, right? And to make everyone else around them, oh, man, this guy, man, he's messing up the work. He's not, you know, really what we need to have around us or whatever. So it's happening. It's everywhere that there are people in the neighborhood that in the community that won't organize with me because of their funding and because of this and whatever, you know what I'm saying? And... Cool.
Same
you know
here. What I'm saying? I became radioactive when these accusations were made against me.
Yeah.
I think a really important thing to name is out of the six of us arrested, maybe there was one conviction on like a minor misdemeanor, if I recall correctly.
I don't even remember.
No convictions.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the funny funny is not the word, but all the intricacies of this, everything was dropped. Yeah. So CSPD spent how much taxpayer money? And like, do you remember the one of the pages of the arrest warrant against me? They did a full page of me in like a bikini vacation pic. I was like, this detective is spending, I'm sure taxpayers love to know that their money is going towards this detective looking at thirst pics on the internet.
Yeah, and the whole reason that we even found any of this out was because they were talking about their undercover's boobs, how big that's her right. boobs were, and that's how we found out
talk about this the whole undercover. Thing. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, honestly, it's a really huge point of pride for me because, as you know, they try to divide us, right? So there were four people in municipal court facing charges, and two of us were in district court on more serious charges, felonies. And as a result of just kind of how my situation was, you remember that I chose to not plead guilty. I was like, hell no, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
And they kept offering me deals and stuff like that. But as part of our legal system, right, as the accused, I was entitled access to all the evidence against me, which was all the body cam mm-hmm. from that protest back July 2021. And because we were so coordinated and working together and in constant communication, I was able to release this quintessential body cam footage.
Yeah.
We call it the Alamo body cam. that we all had eyes on it. And because we were working together, that's how the break came when we realized, like, wait, who are they talking about? Because it was so disturbing and disgusting. Like, you couldn't believe what they were saying. Mm-hmm. Other things they said on that footage, which, by the way, was a fight, right? To get released in court.
Yeah, one of the judges was like, oh, that's not relevant.
It was kept out of the four cases in municipal court, but I managed to get it because my judge essentially ruled on the process merits of it. And the district attorney's office, also complicit in this activity, judicial, they had no argument when the judge said, why do you want to withhold this evidence? The prosecutor said, we don't know. That's just what CSPD asked us. And so that actually pissed off the judge, right?
Like,
because what do you mean you don't know? You're showing up to my court?
Yeah. How the police is. That's how they act, man. And, you know, there's stuff that community organizations can't do because the police said no. Mm-hmm. Like, not the city government, not the elected mm-hmm. officials, not the city council, but the police chief and his mm-hmm. cronies. So that is really happening.
There's a lot of relationships that they have that they leverage within their systems, right? Like, we
to
know
keep that funnel in place.
The municipal judges know the municipal cops,
right?
And of course, the CSPD is constantly working with the Fourth Judicial's office, right? And so, to me, that point of pride is that because I was able to stand my ground and say I refuse to plead guilty, that we were able to get that body cam released. But that was also contingent on the judge in my case doing her
doing
job.
Doing what she should have done,
so
like
that's
doing the
a
right
big
thing.
Piece of systems too, right? Yeah. And let's talk about, we mentioned it a little bit, but what has come of this case, which is actually not a prominent piece of the civil rights case, my case, but it was something that we were already discussing with the surveillance element that as a result of the Alamo body cam, we discovered that Chinook Center and some of its member organizations had been infiltrated by a CSPD officer. And then down the road with other cases, we realized again, there was more evidence that the FBI was somehow connected to this.
Yeah.
So tell me what it was like for the Chinook Center, knowing that cop had been in there and having to, I mean, all of us felt violated.
Yeah,
it
was
the creepiest feeling ever.
When we found out, hey, promise, man, I was like, give me her fucking phone number. I mean, I was like, give me her phone number. And they were like, No, don't, you can't. Like,
not a good move,
yeah, yeah, like,
homie.
You can't because you're going to threaten her or something. So I was really pissed off, man.
And you have every right to be. That's what rubs me with these things is, like, we get violated, and when we react in a very valid way, we
now
get criminalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first thing that she did was broke up the tenants union.
Yes.
Which we took super pride in.
What does that have to do with any sort of domestic terrorism?
Right. Exactly. And it was like, you know, causing infighting between this other group. And the, you know, they kind of, but the members of both of these groups kind of intermingled. So, you know, they were in both of them, some of them. So it caused distrust and, you know, we were really doing great work and good organized. They were, you know, and we were doing support around the stuff that they were doing every day.
The tenants union, and this is why really, it hurts.
Really, I really need that back.
That's right. We need that back.
Yeah, man.
One. And why that matters is because the work that they were doing was protecting people from bad landlords, from slumlords.
During the COVID, getting during evicted. COVID times. Yeah, when they couldn't work and it was like nuts, crazy stuff, man. We were getting the police called on us for bringing groceries to people in the apartment complex. That. Like getting ready to fight cops in the parking lot over grocery bags, yo. So, you know, it's just is what it is with that. So,
people need to know that that's a reality, right? Man.
So, when these things go like this, you know, it's like you can't expect to continue to do these things to these people and then everyone just go to the city council meeting.
That?
Yeah, like we're going to go write a strongly worded email. No, I'm not. I'm going to go.
That's not really Sean Wall's style.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. There's a lot of people that are like, yeah, you know, I promise you. And if, you know, I'm sure that they're going to watch this video.
Oh, I promise you that. That's part of the fear. Like, aren't you afraid? And I happen to think I can handle it. I think I can strike the right balance.
Yeah, they've
but
been
you
watching.
Believe they've been watching, and you believe they're going to watch every episode of this. By the way, ACLU attorneys they believe in the First Amendment, so they were like, "You go, girl." Yeah. And we talk about things, and we're protecting this case because it matters.
Right.
I have no doubt that there's someone going to be assigned to watch every single episode
they
of
should,
this
in which they
to
should.
Bring this somehow in court and try to leverage against
oh,
us.
Oh, yeah.
No
well,
doubt.
That, too. I thought you were saying just to listen and try to gain whatever. You know,
I wish.
Is,
no,
man,
they're
going
to
so
try to use it against
and,
us.
Yeah, they are, man.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you know, I think that for them to just remember that, you know, this stuff didn't start there and it's not going to stop wherever it's this ends, you know? So it's like, how long do you think you're going to be able to get away with this stuff? And then the more that you do, the more, you know, I promise you that I'm supported. Like people, if people call me and say, Sean, shut up. Why are you speaking for everybody? Like you represent this thing. I would shut up. I wouldn't feel as confident in what I'm wrong about something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that does not happen.
Right. You know, you sit in an authentic place.
Right, where people are like, when I go somewhere, they're like, man, keep going, brother, because whatever. The main thing that I get is people are like, they're scared of the cops. They're scared of the city government. So they're like, man, stop being disrespectful to them. And here's the thing. Once you get to the point where we've been organizing around so much disparity and so many inequalities and inequity, all of this stuff that we've been organizing around, we get to see this stuff from a different perspective where I don't care. Like, I'm supposed to be pissed off that this is happening to us. You know, like, I had a city council member, a month ago, ask me to a meeting, and they say, you know, Chinook Center's message would be received more if the delivery basically she talked
the
about
same
cursing
BS. BS
that, you know, you got a lot of nerve,
the tone policing,
right? Like,
it's like be nicer.
So that's what's stopping this, that's what's stopping this stuff,
right.
And then
it's very
the
hollow.
Things that people do come and kiss your ass, you don't even listen to them because you're getting cussed at by somebody else, so this work stops because your feelings are that's not that we're not doing that. So
definitely,
I mean, you know,
not.
We're just going to continue to do what happens, and it's going to grow,
and continue
man.
Continue to
gonna
speak
keep
out.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, I feel so strongly about this podcast because it is very clear to me what they did to me, putting me in a blackout mode, accusing me of a felony, like ruining my career in public service with just a red-letter mark trying to, right?
Yeah, because they couldn't.
All of that. That's retaliation, right? And to me, they saw me and it was like a tactic of like, sit down, shut up, little girl. Like, we're going to teach you a lesson. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I am ever more adamant. It's like, oh, you thought I was going to shut up.
Don't forget to do with the money with the HOA.
Oh, thank you. Don't worry. We'll do an episode
on
that. My bad,
because I'm just saying it probably was connected some way. You know what I'm saying?
I don't doubt it. But the civil litigation involving property manager and my HOA, yeah. I don't doubt that there may have been some connection between that because, well, the property manager was suing me for severe emotional distress because I was trying to hold him accountable to our community. He did mention in that I was being prosecuted with this other criminal case, yeah. Right? So it
like
is
all of this stuff, man.
Like, what do you call it? Death by 1,000 cuts, right? Just adds up on you and adds up. And a lot of people, I totally respect that a lot of people would turn away and like maybe leave town. People told me like, I would have left town if I was you. Yeah. I would never speak out again. Well, the one in 100, right? Like there's two of them sitting
at this table.
Yeah. And so that's why this podcast is meaningful because I feel like to not continue to speak out when there's this extremely important mission we have for the community, which is this case.
Yeah.
That plays into what they want. So no, I won't be afraid to talk about this. And here's another thing, another update kind of about the case, because this, if you looked on one of the websites that like is tracking it, because it's a civil rights case, there's been like 70 plus, maybe nearing 100 different documents filed. And it's just like, for any regular person to be like, wow, this is incredibly boring and what does this even mean? It's all legal jargon.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. So I hope to add more insight to it.
Like, what is this about?
What is this about? And with Arvindades versus City of Colorado Springs, here's another connection about the past that we have is that there was this law passed during BLM summer, which was SB 217, mm-hmm. which essentially, there are different provisions of it, but one of the most important ones is that it put an end to qualified immunity for state and local police in Colorado. That was huge.
Shout out to all the lawmakers on that one, man. They hit
respect.
The nail on the head.
Yeah. Yeah. And we Colorado were the first state ever to do that. And during that summer, that's probably really the first project that you and I really worked on, but it was the creation of what I would say is like the iconic mural that now everybody knows. It's at Chinook Center,
yeah.
And it's honoring SB 217, the legislators that did that work, and it's honoring Devon Bailey. And so that was a really, I would call it like cosmic poetry in a way that I was your co-organizer on that project. Yeah. And then flash forward 3 years, we filed the case where SB 217, I am now a civil rights plaintiff that has like a test case for that law.
Mm.
And in this case, qualified immunity, this is an important update of the case, is that there's a qualified immunity question. Because the defendants, right, which are the detectives, the police, the FBI, the city, they're all arguing that the authority under which they were acting was the FBI's, that it was at the federal level,
mm-hmm.
meaning
that
will SB 217 apply? Yeah, and so we're going through what I call that discovery process, and right now it's been limited. We've had a win, we've had a less than favorable mm-hmm. ruling.
My question to that is, okay, so mm-hmm. if their qualified immunity counts, or if it applies here because they were working with the feds, like the rest of the case that the feds
will decide.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. Like it needs to be the whole way around then, because mm-hmm. I know when, what's the undercover's name? I forgot her
April
name.
April Rogers
got on the stage. She didn't have to answer any questions because it was,
and you're
under
talking
federal
about
immunity.
This is when she was in one of the cases, our co-defendant, who is also in district court, which is kind of like at the county level, the fourth judicial,
mm-hmm.
She was called to testify. And this was in a podcast, right, that the Intercept made an episode about our story, where she basically sat there and told the attorney, I'm not going to answer. And who's telling you not to answer? The federal government.
Yeah. So like, you know, hey, if they're going to let them hide under that umbrella, then I feel like that elevates the case to that portion, right? Where the, like the government mm-hmm. did these things to us.
Well, that is why the FBI is one of the defendants in this case, right?
They gotta be.
And so that is a really, I would say, like meaty part of what this case means for our community, the state, and how the courts will decide these qualified immunity arguments for the officers that we're suing, basically.
Yeah.
So that's still pending. But that's one of the big ones out there. And like I said, we're what's called limited discovery. So we're trying to answer that question within the court. And it's like, that's what the focus is right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see what comes next. But what's also very interesting, which is very relevant to how I do the dance of how I talk about this case, is one thing I've learned as just a person living this experience is the idea of, I never knew that there is what's called a protection order that both parties agree to in a case.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that there are some things that will be labeled confidential and they will always be confidential. And I am not allowed to, I am entitled to see them as one of the parties, as the plaintiff, but I am not permitted to discuss anything that's labeled confidential.
I had to sign that thing today.
Yeah, the thing, there's a lot of paperwork to sign when you're agreeing to something like this protection order. So I have found that fascinating because it's a challenge in the sense like we're learning so many of these things, but we are legally obligated in some regards to it's the Chinook executive officers and myself who fall under this protection order agreement. So we have this level of knowledge that we're not necessarily allowed to fully share with the community, which is a big challenge for me. And another
reason
why.
We'll talk about that after this is over with.
Yes, we will. To some extent. We have to, the protection orders, it's incredible how specific it is. And we could even be obligated to have to return everything that was sent to us or we're like promising to delete it all. And so that's just one example of the minutia, the level of detail that there is involved. In these types of cases.
What they done.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? Setting the stage to be able to hide this stuff because we got to talk about it in public at some point.
It's a part of strategy, right? Like, strategy is going to apply to both sides, but there are things that, for instance, like, what are they withholding? That a good example of that was the Alamo body cam, because why out of 6 cases, only 1 case was able to access that footage? And it's because of all the different factors that go into play, if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
And so that part is fascinating kind of about this journey, but it can get overwhelming with trying to like understand all the process, and there's so much that will play out in the future. So I don't know if I have another year or two or several more years of good podcast content, frankly, because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
But and right now, another kind of process piece is that, right, we're in U.S. District Court because it's a civil rights case. What I didn't know is that there are some structural pieces where the parties can decide like what kind of judges they want, so to speak, and caveat, not an attorney, right? But from just living this experience, I found it fascinating that technically now we have like 2 judges who were looking at the case based on how this legal system is structured. And most recently, I would say that we were looking at the orders, the rulings so far, they seemed favorable. We got a new judge just appointed, right? Because they're at the federal level.
Yeah.
Who their first ruling was, I think, not necessarily where we wanted to be. So there's all these factors that weigh in onto how these cases go.
Yeah.
But those are some of the big ones right now. And I just kind of closing the loop on updates about the case, like any other thoughts that you have about the journey ahead of us, because it will be, I think, a long one, frankly.
Yeah. You know, I think that, man, I can't remember the city council member that we jumped on. She was the bikes against, or was she the,
uh-oh,
I forgot her name, but anyway.
Gabler.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
The bike lady. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So anyway.
Former city council member Jill Gabler.
Yeah, we were during the uprisings and she said, you know, government is best when it moves slower, something to that effect, or it needs
which
to move slower.
You only say so from a place of immense privilege.
Right.
My goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, ever since then, I mean, it's not that I didn't recognize that, but when hearing her say that, I was like, oh man, they're trying to rock us to sleep and just, okay, well, you know, we'll have a meeting or whatever, you know. And it's the same kind of deal. I said all that to say about this case. You know, it's taken a long-ass time to get, and it's not even close.
It took a long-ass time to get
to
filed.
Get it there.
Yeah, and it's not even going to be done for a while yet.
Yeah. I feel like the main important, the most important part of this is that we keep going.
Yes,
and we don't just wait and be dormant. Oh, I got a case and I can't do any work.
We don't remain silent. Yeah.
Yeah, man, bump that. Mm-mm. I'm not doing that. And thank you. I'm not going to take part in that. And, you know, that's why, you know, we just keep things going. You know, the Shemitz Center is strong. You know, the MOI has grown. And I need to say real quick that the MOI and the Shemitz Center are two completely different things and got two completely different missions. And in fact, the MOI is under one body as the 501c3. They're
The fiduciary.
Our fiscal sponsor.
Yeah, the fiscal sponsor. There you go.
And then the Chinook Center has the mission that we've always had. So I don't want to convolute
separate
these things.
Separate nonprofit organizations.
Exactly. And the reason, why though? You know,
and
why
both
do
grassroots,
I need
which, you know, I could see why people get confused in the sense like,
yeah.
Those of us in the community, we wear about 8 to 10 different hats.
Right. Yeah, and this thing with the MOI really is a big is making a big impact in the community. A lot of people are very responsive to it, so I don't want to confuse the efforts of this group with, you know, we're in court and we're doing these things, we're fighting the cops or whatever it is. Not to say that, you know, they're not members of the community. It's still, as you know, whatever these different entities that bring together the MOI don't support it, but it's really not what we're on. You know, really, the MOI is here to answer some of these problems that have been created in the mix of all of this stuff that's been going on over our head, you know?
Yeah.
So we have gun violence and gang violence and, you know, family problems, and I don't even really know what the right word to call that, you know, but there's things that we're trying to deal with inside of the neighborhood, inside of the community. So we are doing things. We're trying to work with the city government, and we're trying to introduce programs that we can communicate with the city government and the police communicate with the city government, and then we get a good answer at the top. Those are things that we're trying to do with the MOI. Yeah. So
what I really hear you saying, if I may, and definitely tell me if this resonates, but when I hear you name those important elements of the community off, I really think about it as, this is like addressing the root causes of crime. Like, you can either react to crime and like keep your paychecks and keep the coffers for the police full, or you can address the root causes of crime and just try to quell that
stop
before it even gets there.
Yeah, yeah. So, we have found a lot of answers and a lot of ways to be able to get to that. And I just want to really make that distinction here because it's
so
very
you heard
important.
It here. Men of Influence, separate organization from Chinook Center, Men of Influence under the one body ENT 501c3.
Yeah, the community there, and they're doing a great, every one body is doing so fantastic.
It's complimentary. It's collaborative.
It is. It's
and if anything, we've had these conversations, Sean, I think specific, and I may do a whole episode on this, but is that we have watched this community grow in an incredible way, and this case is a piece of that because of that fear of us organizing. Because back during, even as recently as BLM summer, you and I talked about how some people who were straight up pretenders, they were never community organizers.
Yeah.
The mayor at the time, John Southers, he used them as leverage because, these are good looking black and brown kids who I can put on the cover. We can try to get them on the cover of the Gazette or the Indie, and it'll look like the administration, the city is being responsive to BLM, but they were never truly embedded representative of the community in any
that
way.
That was organizing.
And and respectfully, they were kids who I think had a lot of heart, a passion about it, but they hadn't been doing the work to build the community.
They were trying to replicate what they saw on Instagram. You know, hey, man, one thing, I don't want to, like, downgrade anybody's.
We don't want to dismiss that. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It did some stuff, you know what I'm saying? So here, like, one thing that I learned with the Chinook Center is everybody's activism counts, you know? So some people don't like that I call the pigs, little kids, piglets. You know, they're like, that's rude. Well, that's what they're raising them to be. You know, they're raising them to be cops just like them. And we're raising our kids to be people, just, you know, the same thing. That's what is happening here. Yeah. So those kind of things create conversations in our community and in our neighborhood too. You know what
I'm
saying?
They don't have to be easy conversations. Exactly. Like, we're going to have to have a talk.
Yeah, we need all of it. We need all of that stuff, and we need to be able to have these conversations amongst ourselves. So I don't downgrade or disrespect anyone's activism and just say that it didn't count, because I know it counted somewhere.
It did. We got LETAC, and whether or not you want to debate if that's effective, we have our opinions here. We're shaking our heads. We don't think it's effective.
Even they
especially
don't think they're
effective. When the city's law enforcement transparency and accountability commission, I believe it is, or committee.
They took out accountability and moved
they,
and did something.
They changed the word accountability, because they knew they couldn't honor that.
Yeah.
They changed it to advisory. And
just
like, what,
we're just gonna tell you what we see you guys doing.
Yeah, it never had any teeth, and then they
and that's what happens when you let the mayor puppeteer the community. And
that's what we saw during BLM summer.
Man, we're at 45 minutes, but we're looking like we got another one trying to do the same thing. You know, like the same thing is happening over in a different way, in a different form.
You're talking about 2A?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm proud of us. I know a lot of us organized because we did not believe that taxpayers should have to give back money for a new police facility and the transparency that was lacking there. And so, fair enough, I want to make sure in our last few minutes here, if there's anything that you want to plug to uplift the people,
because
we got good things going on too. Anything coming up this February, March, even in the summertime, what we got going on?
The MOI, we're fundraising. You know, we got a mentorship program that we're running out of D2 schools right now. Super Bowl's coming up, and it's also
happy early birthday.
Also happens to be my birthday, so February 11th we'll be doing that. Jen Smith is being recognized on the 18th.
Right.
I meant to pull it up before we got there. But anyway,
we'll get the link on the
there's some
post.
She's being awarded, so we'll be there doing our thing. So I'm thinking that, you know, really Juneteenth is the, you know, I think Mother's Day comes up in May, right?
Oh yeah, got your Mother's Day event with MOI. That's
really
a big
the
one.
One Body and the MOI, we got something that's going on every month. We got 12 calendared events, and
so
we're just coming out of our planning quarter, so every month we're going to have something going on.
How can people check that out? Look on the website, the Facebook, what's the best way?
Yep, themenofinfluence.com. We got a website, so you can donate there. Also at thechinookcenter.org, we got all our stuff there, calendar and all of the things that's going on with the organizations. Themenofinfluence.com and chinookcenter.org, man, and we appreciate everybody. You know, the Chinook Center is funded by small donations.
People power.
You know, we got a few grants for our pantry and activities that's going on around that, but most of the things come from the people. So we're open from Wednesday.
Oh, People's Grocery.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yep. We're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 12 to 5. We do our pantry on Sundays from 12 to 2, and that's every Sunday. Rain, sleet, or snow, we're there, man. So come through. That's at 2551 Airport Road, and that's in Suite 107. So it's on the back end over there of the complex. And yeah, man, we're just gonna have a good time. So if you guys see anything on the Facebook page, just know that it's always, you're welcome. We're family friendly events. You know, you can bring your kids. You can do all that stuff, and know that you're gonna be in a safe space and be able to have some fun. So thank you so much, Jackson. Thanks
Absolutely.
For everything that you do. I love you so much.
I love you.
All of these opportunities that you brought me in front of, and you know that
always.
We're just going to keep going. We always talk about we're going to be 80 one day and drinking coffee and talking about this stuff. So the work continues, huh?
The work continues. We're making history here, and I thank you for all you do. And so in closing here, I'll just remind folks, thanks again for joining us at Justice with Jax, and ask yourselves two questions today. Who's telling your story, and how are you being the change you want to see in the world today? And just a quick note, we're so grateful that we're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small business in downtown Colorado Springs. Justice with Jack signing off.